Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. Starring the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. Thank you very much. I have decided that it would be very beneficial to our listeners to have the opportunity to meet David, the Oracle Pills. David and I have met not long ago, and I would like him to actually describe how we met. I know David as an amazing person. He feels like a brother to me, and yet we have only met a few short months ago. And he is a man who, well, I think I best let him explain, perhaps going back to his childhood experiences and going through what got him to where he is now. The most fantastic thing for me is that he actually lives not far from here. So I actually have somebody nearly within, I could even walk there in a day. That's kind of wonderful. So, David Pills.
Welcome. Well, Martin, I mean, with an introduction like that, I'm wondering who it is you're talking about. But thank you. I'm humbled and absolutely pleased to hear your words. And you know, I feel the same, of course. You know, every so often you meet somebody that you have that instant connection with, call whatever you want, karma or chemistry or what have you, and absolutely, Martin, I feel the same way. About, you know, meeting you in this lifetime, I feel very privileged to have done so, and I look forward to continuing to see what our relationship can do for everybody else, you know?
Great. I think that it's something to do with the star children or something like that. I think we're related in some way that way.
Well, that wouldn't be a coincidence in any way then, would it? I guess I'll take my cue from, you know, you're suggesting that I kind of just start my story. I got to tell you, folks, it's taken me, you know, over 40 years to create this story. And I apologize if this is going to be a little bit long-winded, because it may potentially take me 10 years to say it all, to actually get it in. So I'll just kind of start with, you know, right from way back, you know, 40 years ago plus, you know, I was one of those weird kids you hear about, born seeing auras and connecting into the spirit realm. And I had a certain something going on inside my brain that we all have going on, but I did not have the filters in place. You know, since, you know, being born, I've, you know, spent an entire lifetime trying to understand metaphysics, parapsychology. I've had the privilege of working with people like, you know, Morse Friedman, who was the foremost neurologist on the planet, for example. Him and I have had many conversations in this lifetime about what it means to be, and I use the term very loosely, psychic. Because, again, I was born with these labels of psychic and later on, of course, those labels turned into things like indigo child and crystalline child and Lightarian child and all of these things. But, you know, ideally, they were just labels. But when I was born, you know, even just 40 years plus, you know, you look back on society, and even back then, 40 years ago, you didn't even talk about this stuff. You certainly didn't share it with, you know, the general public, because there was still so much fear and ignorance and misconception involved. And you know, I was raised, you know, a good little Lutheran boy to keep your mouth shut about things of this nature, because, you know, I hate to say it, they crossed over into things that they labeled as potentially evil, etc., you know? And my whole journey, literally from birth onward, has been a self-exploration of trying to figure out what makes my brain different than somebody else's. You know, when I was going to school as a kid, my friends were worried about wearing their Adidas shoes to school and being cool and, you know, and all that stuff. And, you know, my frets and worries were the fact that, for example, when I look at somebody, I see auras perpetually. When I look at somebody, when I look at a plant, when I look at an animal, when I look at a tree, if it has life in it, there is an auric emanation that emanates from that. And I see that all the time. That's never off for me. But when I look at somebody and I don't see it, that means they have approximately 3 months to live. Oh. And it's fascinating, of course, but, you know, as a child, this has been my experience. You know, I look at somebody in my world and I look at, you know, they don't have an aura, so that just means that they're passing. It's fascinating stuff, and that was just, you know, kind of the way it is. What I've since learned, of course, is that, yes, it takes us approximately 9 months to get into this world. It takes us approximately 3 months to leave. And every single person on the planet is very aware, even if it's just on a subconscious level, that they are going. and the transition is taking place. And my experience in this manner has been whether that transition was a car accident or somebody dying of a health issue. It's just been very consistent. So as a child, I had to learn these things, and, you know, I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me, because that's not what this conversation is about, but I had to cope with the idea, even as a very young man, that, for example, my best friend was worrying about the shoes he was wearing to school, and I was worrying about the fact that I could see his mom was about to pass away, you know? And so much of my life had to take on an instant maturity, had to take on a dynamic that very few people could comprehend, you know? And, you know, I could see, you know, those things that go bump in the night. And they didn't frighten me, fascinatingly enough. You know, what scares me is people and the unpredictability of them, you know? But the universe itself is actually a wonderful place, and there is a balance that's out there. And I made friends with the Creator, I made friends with God, I made whatever term or label that you want to put upon this, the Matrix, the all that is, the collective consciousness. You know, there's so many different variations that I explored over my lifetime as far as what it was that religion and even culture brought to the table. But I got to tell you, I did find some salvation in science, because, you know, I mentioned earlier, even, you know, Morris Friedman, you know, when I was 9, 10 years old, honest to goodness, I was checking out of the library his textbooks. You know, Morris Friedman is the foremost, you know, neurologist on the planet. If you're a brain surgeon, you've read his textbooks. What I found fascinating was that this guy was actually explaining to me things like hypothalamus and pineal and pituitary and how it all kind of works and how it all fits together and the chemistry equations of it. And so I could relate to, when I was exhibiting or having a psychic experience, certain parts of my brain would actually be triggered. What I could then do is look at the map of the brain and see very clearly that, oh, well, that's where it's happening, and this is what it does, and this is the chemistry, and I found salvation in that, in the sciences, believe it or not. So I spent my entire lifetime trying to understand and explain what was going on in my brain. I got to tell you, before I was 11 years old, I wanted it to go away. I did not see it as the blessing, as the gift, as the, you know, all of these things that I see it as today. I saw it as a curse. It made me too different. It made me too unique. It made me strange and weird and all of those things, and I didn't like it. At age 11, I had a near-death experience. My appendix exploded, and the poison hit my heart, and off I went through the lights, fascinating journey. I honest to goodness recommend a near-death experience to everybody. It changes your perspective on everything, you know? So I came back from that near-death experience, having a very clear idea of where I was going and what I was about and what I was supposed to be accomplishing in this lifetime. And it was okay for me to be psychic. It was okay for me to have these events taking place in my world and for my senses to be perceiving life around me in this manner. Because I knew then that inevitably everybody on the planet was going to catch up. I was just a scout, if you like. I was just a pioneer. I was one of those humans that was born into this incarnation to express these paranormal gifts, if you like. But eventually, everybody was going to catch up. Everybody is born subconsciously psychic. Everybody is born connected to that world around them, the universe itself. I'm not different. I just don't have a filter. That's, if there's any difference whatsoever, is I don't have a filter preventing me from accessing all that information, all of that input. And everybody, and I don't care who you are, can develop that. It's like a muscle. It's like any other muscle in the world that you can absolutely do these mental push-ups. And over my lifetime, I've learned, you know, I was 16 years old, downtown Calgary, had my own apartment. Man, you would think that was a party house. What happened was twice a week at least, we had meditation circles. We would read about, you know, people like Edgar Cayce and the Fox Sisters and other mediums and other people who've expressed paranormal abilities and gifts. And whenever we read that, for example, psychokinetic ability was available to the human, which means, of course, you can move things with your mind, we would, as youth, going through this psychic shift, which everybody kind of experiences at that time, we were pushing ourselves to try and accomplish what it was that we could, reaching our fullest potential in our psychic centers. And I learned a lot, literally through trial and error through those days, and that went on for years and years and years and years. You know, not to say I didn't have my share of partying. Of course, I'm human too. But I can also, I can share with you that, again, my journey was kind of, you know, one step in trying to be normal, one foot in trying to be normal, and one foot in trying to, you know, explore this fullest potential of what this is all about. Years later, I got out of contracting. What I was doing was building houses for a living and running a bunch of different businesses. And then, yes, I was making money. Don't kid yourself. Being psychic in business pays off very well. But it wasn't about the money. It was never about doing those things or accomplishing those things in this lifetime that most people deem success. My ambitions were much more esoteric in nature, and they always have been, you know? And so my pursuits were, to try and achieve my fullest potential, and I was doing so. I walked around my very first psychic fair, and this was about 18 years ago now, I guess, 20 years or so. Walked around my very first psychic fair, and I was just aghast. You know, I couldn't believe that here was 100 exhibitors. You know, 9 out of 10 of them weren't psychic in any way. They weren't connected. Again, I can see auras. I can tell when you're connected and what's going on, you know. But I was aghast because here was this huge room full of these psychics, these people who were offering advice, and in some cases not much more than just pop psychology, to clients who were coming in. And I went into anger. And I realized now, looking back, I went into anger not even so much that there was a whole bunch of rip-off artists in that room, but I went into anger because here I was hiding. You know, I was trying to keep this secret. I was trying to keep this private. I was trying to keep my mouth shut like I was taught. And yet I knew I could make a difference. You know, I should have stepped forward and just kind of, you know, provided an opportunity to show the world, you know, what a human really is capable of when they're being genuine anyway, you know. And so I went to the promoter and I waved my mighty finger and I went into judgment, went into, you know, all of that, and you know, I asked her, is it all about money and don't you care, is there no discernment and da 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 da. And she asked me, what do you know about it? And I said, well, I've been reading tarot cards since I was 11 years old, and oh my God. What I can tell you is that wonderfully she's become a good friend of mine, but in that moment she allowed my ego to paint itself into a corner. And then she hit me with, well, bucko, you think you're so hot, here's an empty booth. Why don't you strut your stuff? Show us what you got. What could I do? But I went down to the corner store and I got myself a cardboard sign and I wrote the Oracle on it. And that was the beginning of my career officially as the Oracle. And, you know, previous, even when I was a contractor, the nickname the Oracle was in my life as my CB handle. You know, whenever the guys wanted to get hold of me, because we used CB radio to communicate with one another, you know, you always heard, hey, Oracle, you got your ears on? Which amused the heck out of anybody who was within earshot, of course. But the bottom line is that I stepped in as the Oracle on that day. And I got to tell you, before I was done, I had a 5-hour waiting list. I loved it. Here was me being truthful. Here was me being myself, choosing a path that was leading me in a direction that I really wanted to go. Never mind, like so many other psychics who are kind of weekend warriors where they do something else for a living, and they do this kind of on the weekends to try and, you know, further their own depth, their own philosophy. I mean, psychic fairs are full of psychics looking for answers, just the same as, you know, shrink offices are full of shrinks looking for answers themselves, too. It's no different in the psychics world either, you know. And so I stepped into it, and boy, did I step into it. I literally started traveling the world. I wrote some TV. I wrote some of the movies. I've been involved with metaphysics and parapsychology on a scientific level, as well as a media level, as well as in pretty much everywhere I can stick my nose into it. I've since written a bunch of books and meditation CDs that actually work. I had an amazing career as the Oracle. And that should be, you know, fascinating enough for most people. I mean, just being able to be that metaphysical instructor. These days, of course, as the Oracle, I'm that psychic that other psychics come to for training. That's kind of the niche of it. I've spent my whole lifetime learning what works and what doesn't work. And if I can spend even just a day with somebody, I can give them all sorts of amazing techniques that are going to crank up their psychic centers like they wouldn't even dream of was even possible. And it's not magic, and it's not even, you know, mystical. It's common sense and applied technique, you know. And so this is kind of what my career was. Now, about 6 years ago, I was living in Chilliwack, British Columbia, just outside Vancouver. And something started happening in my world. My spidey sense started to tingle, is the best way for me to put it. I felt that there was some changes taking place on this planet that really I had no control over. And yes, I do have my concerns of the West Coast and, you know, template activity and earthquakes and tsunamis and all that stuff. And yes, unfortunately, whether I, you know, like to put it out there or not, I do predict that at some point in time there's going to be some danger there, even more so than we've experienced thus far. So anyway, about 6 years ago, my spidey sense went off the charts, and I knew it was time to step in and find that place that I saw in a vision at 11 years old when I had my near-death experience. I started looking. I started putting it out there, having conversations with wherever you believe, you know, a psychic can have conversations with, you know, God or angels or Star Nation, absolutely. I started connecting. I started communing and looking for that place. And I'm very proud to say that I found it. The place that I am now living, I call it Om Haven Ranch. Om means love, of course, and haven means home. So love lives here. You know, kind of cute, but it really does express what it is that I feel this place is doing, you know. And this was 6 years ago. So I stepped in and moved into this place and moved my family up from Chilliwack, B.C., and got all settled in and started working the family farm like we used to back. You know, when my father came to Canada here from Germany, we homesteaded the Devon area. So for us, you know, raising chickens and pigs and cows and all that stuff is nothing new. And it was really nice to get back to basics again, start loving the land, start connecting with the place. And I'll share with you that even then, you know, I didn't share completely with my whole family, but the reason I bought this place is because I saw a vision of it back when I was 11 years old. Even some of my family, I was a little bit, you know, secretive and private with and what have you, because, you know, they just didn't quite comprehend some of it sometimes. And but that's okay. I made choices as best as I could, and I explained it to them in terms they understood. And, you know, what they understood was this is going to be a better lifestyle for us, you know. So there I am. You know, we moved in. We got things going. My career as the Oracle is happening just beautifully. And then, unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at this, I became a pipe carrier. And what that means, I've been following the red path, or more specifically, I've been walking beside the red path my entire life. I'm not indigenous. I'm not native. I am white. I'm very Caucasian, absolutely. But I'm very proud to say that even back in my early 20s, some of the elders saw something in me. And they started coming to me for their advice and honoring me with, you know, not only just in teachings, but honoring me with, you know, allowing me to teach them, you know, allowing me to share with them what it is that I know and what it is that I've learned, you know, and putting it in terms that they understood in a language that they understood as well. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, science can get very complicated with these long million-dollar words, you know. And so I spoke layman, I spoke real, I spoke genuine, and I spoke from the heart always. And they honored me by just keeping on coming, you know. It's actually interesting because sometimes when they're at war with each other, you know, and this happens, of course, in all families, not just the indigenous people, but sometimes when they're at war with each other, they would come and see me. I just made sure I didn't book them on the same day. And so many times in hindsight when, you know, the troubles had kind of all settled down and everybody had forgiven everybody and they were working out, okay, where did we go wrong and where did we go right, so often they would catch me in hindsight, you know, kind of playing both sides of the fence in that good way. You know, I would say what needed to be said to the specific peoples that it needed to be heard by, you know. And so for many, many years they tried to, and they offered to bring me into the longhouse and offer me my native name. And, you know, they saw something in me that, you know, was very much a kinship for them. And they recognized my connection to the world around me that up until meeting me, they'd only seen kind of within their own culture, within their own people, you know. And you know, well, fortunately or unfortunately, for so many years that it kept on being offered this amazing gifting of, you know, again, getting my native name and teaching me the teachings and taking me in through, you know, all of that, I kept turning it down. And I kept turning it down for the right reasons. I am not blood red. I'm not native. I'm not... I'll never really truly understand what it's like to be born a Native. And I didn't want to ever, ever, ever be that white guy trying to be a Native. You know, there's too many of them out there kind of pretending as it is, you know. And I never wanted to be that. I'm very proud of who I am. I'm very proud of my heritage and where I've come from and what I'm all about. And I don't need another name to validate that, you know. So I kept on with as much honor as I could explaining to them that these elders that, you know, I couldn't. And there was another something or other I explained to them that, of course, you know, they could completely agree with. And that was, if I found myself, for example, in an Ojibwa, you know, ceremony, and I got my naming from them specifically, then I knew that there were going to be some other tribes out there that maybe didn't like me so much anymore. Because there is a lot of politics in the indigenous people. Again, they're no different than anybody else as far as that's concerned. And, you know, I didn't want to step on any toes. I didn't want to insult anybody. And I found that I was able to do way better work, that good work, being neutral, by not being necessarily aligned with any one tribe or another, you know? And so this was my life for so many years. So imagine my surprise when there I was in my Edmonton office, just kind of enjoying life, and this lady by the name of Holly comes in and drops this bundle in my lap and says, "This is yours." And, you know, I started unwrapping this bundle. And even before I even saw it, I knew what I was looking at. I was looking at a pipe. I was looking at what they call a chinupa. You know, many Caucasian people would kind of assign peace pipe as a label, you know, to express what this thing is. But there really is not necessarily anything as a peace pipe per se. And that's another teaching, of course. But what I can share with you is that when somebody becomes a pipe carrier, when they become a chinupa carrier, There are teachings, there are things that they have to go through and learn in order to accomplish that. In some cases, it's 4 years of teaching. In other cases, it's 11 years of teaching, where you go through Sundance, and you go through ceremony, you go through teaching after teaching after teaching, and you earn the rights to carry that pipe, and you show the Creator that, you know, you're walking the path in that good way, you know? And then, at some point in time, that pipe shows up, you know? So I knew that somebody coming in and just handing me a pipe was not how it's done. I mean, I knew that, you know. And I got to confess, I even in the moment tried to give that pipe back to this lady. I explained to her, just like I explained to you just now, why I was giving it back. Because I don't believe that I've earned it. I know dang well this isn't how it happens. You know, I know this is not how a chinupa shows up in someone's world. So I tried handing this pipe back to her and thanking her very much for honoring me with, you know, you know, with recognizing and all of that, but, you know, I couldn't possibly dream of accepting this pipe, especially under these conditions. And wouldn't you know it, what happened to me next, I'll never forget. I don't know about you or your listeners, Martin, but I'm a father, and I was there each of the three times that my children were born. I was in that delivery room. And I got to share with you the feeling that I encountered deep within me when I tried handing that pipe back to that woman was very much like that feeling when I first met my son, for example. That there was such an overwhelming bonding, there was such an overwhelming connection between me and this pipe that I hadn't even laid my eyes on yet. It would have been very much like giving my son away. And of course, I mean, any parent knows that, you know, that will never happen. That will never do. And I found myself saying, "I accept, but boy, we got to talk, you know." And she explained to me that this is the Star Nation pipe. This pipe dates back in prophecy a very, 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 very long ways. What happened as recent as 1996 and 1997, a gentleman by the name of Standing Elk, a Golden Light Chief Eagle, Golden Light Eagle, he held a conference, a Star Nation conference, and invited the whole world to show up. And wouldn't you know it, a whole bunch of the world did show up, presidents and monarchy, and NASA scientists, and all of these people from all walks of life showed up in Sedona, Arizona for this conference. And he announced to the world, after apologizing to the elders profusely for doing so, he announced to the world that it was now time, because the omens were very clear, the stars were aligning in such a way, the white buffalo calves were being born, and that it was time for the Star Nation to come back. Fascinating stuff, of course, because after an entire lifetime of walking beside the red path, I'd only ever so briefly even heard a Native or indigenous person make reference to the Star Nation. And yet, here's this gentleman coming out, who's a Lakota Sioux, coming out and a chief and all of this, and sharing with the whole world that, wouldn't you know, these aliens are coming back. And in their teachings, in the indigenous teachings that he held, that he holds true, is that we were not originally from this planet, and that we did come from someplace else. And when we settled here, we settled into communities and civilizations that have risen and fallen. Some of the Caucasian, you know, folks might recognize these civilizations by other names, like Lemurians and Atlanteans and Sumerians. And there's a whole bunch of other Eons in between there, and now it's our turn, you know? And ultimately, what's going on here is, you know, never mind just the 2012 scenario and, you know, Hopi prophecy and Mayan calendars and all that stuff. There's something going on, absolutely beyond the shadow of a doubt. And according to the Star Nation teachings, this is a cyclical event that was predicted and to take place. Well, it happened 13,000 years before, and it happened 13,000 years previous to that. And it's just like winter shows up every year. But, you know, there isn't anybody who's 13,000 years old to kind of remember it, except for maybe the Hopi. And the Hopi, and the reason they stand so true to their teachings is because they confess that they've lived through it. You know, their people and their teachings were kept alive the last time this 13,000-year cycle happened, and et cetera. So anyway, here I am stepping forward as this oracle, and I've been spending my whole lifetime, ever since I was a kid, trying to understand the new species. You know, and of course, you know, in my explorations, of course I had, you know, explored, you know, past incarnations as a Lemurian, as an Atlantean. I carry the Lemurian seed crystals, I mean, with me all the time. There's such a powerful bond and connection with those ancient civilizations that here it's coming full circle, and they're just putting another label on it. It's called Star Nation. And Standing Up made it very clear that the Star Nation are coming back. A part of the prophecy and a part of the predictions that were made was that there would be a white man, a white-skinned man, that would show up to start bridging the nations together, the white and the red path, you know, start bridging that together, start bridging the ancient past with the new technologies that are available today, start bridging, you know, the balancing act, you know, and that this white guy was going to show up and, honest to goodness, you know, start being this bridge, start bringing this, being this mediator, you know. And as a peripheral result, you know, through spirit and what have you, this Chinupa was created, and this woman, Holly, carried it with her for a number of years before she met me for the first time. When she met me for the first time, she was shocked and amazed because, of course, she'd seen my face in her dreams and she'd seen my face in her visions, but never thought in a million years that she would actually meet me personally. And wouldn't you know what she did? She met me. And she did do protocol, and she gifted me this pipe, and then I took this pipe and, you know, much to my surprise, and came home and started working with it. And I'll be perfectly honest, I was a little afraid to share with other people, especially my indigenous elders and my friends, that I'd received this pipe in this manner, you know, because I knew they'd be angry. I knew they'd be frustrated. I knew that they knew that I knew better, you know. And that any other white guy could come home with that Chinupa and put it up on his fireplace and say, hey, look what I got, you know. I couldn't do that, not in all integrity, not in all, you know. So I brought that pipe home, and I started working with it and thinking that, well, maybe this can be my personal pipe. And, you know, maybe no one else has to know about it. And, you know, I've heard these things, you know, take place, you know. And so I went up on my hill up here at Ohm Haven, and I banged my drum, and I sang my songs, and I communed with Creator and the world around me. And I got that pipe all ready to go, you know, in that good way, you know, because I'd seen it done. You know, I'd been through enough, you know, ceremony to recognize what's required to get a pipe ready to go. I went to light that thing, and, you know, no one else was there besides me, you know, just me. And I couldn't light that pipe no matter what. There was this force preventing me from accessing that and actually lighting that pipe. And the universe made it very clear to me, David, you, the pipe is ready, but you're not. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm not? You know? So in frustration, after attempting to light that thing a few times and realizing that it ain't going to happen, there's something preventing this from taking place, I came down off that mountain, I picked up the phone, and I phoned up a few of the elder friends that I know of, and, you know, the conversation kind of went, you know, hey, I'm a pipe carrier. And they said, great, fantastic, what's your native name? And I said, well, that's the problem, I didn't go through ceremony. fascinating story, and I'll share it with your listeners one of these days, of course, that whole scenario. But at the end of the day, they recognized me as, well, of course it's David, who's the Star Nation pipe carrier. Of course it's him. He's been walking this walk for so many years anyway. This is kind of like his PhD, just, you know, showing the rest of the world, you know, kind of that he's earned the right to be able to carry that pipe in that good way. And again, of course, it's David, you know. And so then they did pull me through ceremony, and I did get my name. And I did receive lots of teachings, and I've received teachings every day regarding Star Nation and all that. And I've been walking that path now for, you know, it's probably been less than 3 years now, I got to tell you, you know. And, you know, I've got a lodge on the property, and now a sweat lodge is what they, the layman's term for it is. The true name for a sweat lodge is a Stone People's Purification Ceremony. I know there's a lot of natives out there who would be very happy I just said that. It's not a sweat lodge, you know. But anyway, I've been walking that path now for, you know, 2.5, 3 years or so. And, you know, it's been an amazing journey. And I've learned things that, of course, you know, most people don't learn. And I've received teachings that, you know, I'm so honored because I know that, you know, these are teachings that the indigenous people have kept alive for thousands of years. And, you know, they feel compelled to share these with me, you know, and of course, with that pipe. And I'm very, 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 very blessed. My native name, in case it matters to some out there, Pe'ekwisl is how you say it in the indigenous Pe'ekwisl, and it translates into white star. And white star, of course, to them has nothing to do with the fact that I'm white. The white star means the North Star to them. And to them, it was relevant because, one, the Creator, you know, gifted that name in ceremony, but also in reflection, they realized that, you know, the North Star is the center of the navigation maps. And that's where you look, you know, kind of when you're lost and you can't find your way, you look to the North Star for direction. And, you know, those people who meet me kind of claim that they feel an energy and an emanation coming from me, which could, you know, also translate into a star being and all those things. So anyway, I walked that path for a while.
This ends part one of our two-part series on Om Haven Ranch, David Pilz, and Ormus Gold. And next time, David is going to be sharing how he met Martin and what the two of them have been coming up with as far as actually using Ormus and how it's created and what it is and all those wonderful things. So thanks for joining us. You've been listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op's online radio network, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. Thanks for joining us, everybody. See you next time.